Okay. This week we start a new history. We start a new history of Shem and Terah. And this is going to lead us to Abraham, and his name means the father of multitudes. What Abraham is going to be, he's going to be the head of the chosen family. In chapter 10, told us how the sons of Noah spread all over the earth. And this should be familiar to you now. All the nations of the world descended from Shem, Ham, and Japheth, his three sons. And people scattered from the area of Mesopotamia, which is Babylon, and they formed nations. And all of the nations that make up the human race come from Noah's family. And today we're going to bring our focus onto one man named Shem. Try to make it very simple. You have Shem basically settled in Babylon, and Ham basically settled in Egypt, and Japheth basically firstly settled in Greece. And then right in the middle of that is Canaan. Let's go back and pick it up at the beginning. Beginning of chapter 11, 1 through 9, because it's from here that we got to this. So we got to start here. Now the whole earth used the same language and the same words. I'm in 11:1. And it came about as they journeyed east, they found a plain in the land of Shinar and settled there. And they said to one another, "Come, let us make bricks and burn them thoroughly." And they used brick for stone, and they used tar for mortar. Remember, I point out that's the same word that was used on the ark to make it waterproof. And they said, "Come, let us build for ourselves a city and a tower whose top will reach or is in or goes to heaven. And let us make for ourselves a name." Now that's an important little line. "Lest we be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth." Even though God commanded us to scatter, we just don't want to do it. In verse 5, "The Lord came down to see the city and the tower which the sons of men had built." I love it. And God's looking down from heaven and it all looks the same. Yeah. I think this is pretty neat. They're building up the tower to heaven and God's got to come down to look at it. "And the Lord said, behold, they are one people and they all have the same language. And this is what they began to do. And now nothing which they purpose to do will be impossible for them." His point is they're going to get together, they're going to gather together in this city, in this place, and because they have one language, they're going to unify under this one man, and they're not going to separate. And so it's going to be possible for them to do this. And so he's going to go and break that up. So he says to himself, "Come, let us go down there and confuse their language, that they may not understand one another's speech." And then verse 8 is the result of going down and confusing the speech. "So the Lord scattered them abroad from over the face of the whole earth, and they stopped building the city. Therefore, its name was called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of the whole earth, and from there the Lord scattered them abroad over the face of the whole earth." Now look at how easy that was for him. No force. He didn't have to bring in an army to break them up. He just confused their language. And all of a sudden people, you know, when you can't understand what somebody else is saying, it instantly makes you suspicious of them. You ever notice that? Maybe you don't, but I do notice that. You know, you wonder, what are they saying about me? I don't know what they're saying. So you're a little bit guarded then. Now, when you look at this map, Shem and Babylon, they do go north and south from here, and they basically settle the area of Arabia. Ham, he goes west, as well as settling in Egypt, go and settle Africa. And Japheth, they go north, where it's colder, and they basically spread to the west as well, into what we call Western Europe. Now, Canaan is a grandson of Ham. Noah cursed this son. So Canaan started the nation right there where God would plant his chosen people. And first, he's going to plant them as a family under Abraham. Then he's going to plant them as a nation under Moses. And finally, and this is future, he's going to plant them as a kingdom under Jesus Christ. The family of Abraham, the Jewish nation, will be planted in the future in that land. So God in his grace will take this land of a cursed son, from which comes a cursed people, and turn it into the source of the greatest blessing the world will ever see. Now let's pick up the family of Shem in 11:10. These are the records of the generation of Shem. Shem was 100 years old, became the father of Arpachshad 2 years after the flood. So now Shem is going to build his family and his legacy after the flood. And this is the beginning of Shem's genealogy. It focuses totally on him. And skip down to 27. We're going to skip through all these other verses. Skip down to 27. It's going to start a new genealogy, a new history, and this history is going to focus ultimately on Abraham. These are the records of the generation of Terah. Terah became the father of Abram, Nahor, and Haran. And Haran became the father of Lot. And Haran died in the presence of his father Terah in the land of his birth in Ur of the Chaldeans. See, now here's where you get this. That's the link between Shem and Abraham. They're in the land of the Chaldeans, the Babylonians, Ur. And Abram and Nahor took wives for themselves. The name of Abram's wife was Sarah. Now you're starting to get into some very familiar people, aren't you? And the name of Nahor's wife was Milcah, the daughter of Haran, the father of Milcah and Iscah. And Sarah was barren. She had no child. Just one statement there about Sarah. 31. And Terah took Abram his son, and Lot, the son of Haran, his grandson, and Sarah, his daughter-in-law, his son Abram's wife, and they went out together from Ur of the Chaldeans in order to enter, here's the purpose, to enter the land of Canaan. And they went as far as Haran, and they settled there. And the days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. Now, where was he intending to go? To Canaan. What happened? Got to Haran, and he died. Everybody dies in this book. You notice that? Starting back in chapter 5. Everybody dies except one guy, Enoch. So why does everybody have to die? Sin. The penalty for sin is death. It's not coming to this class. It's not giving your money. It's not being baptized. It's death. Now the Lord said to Abram, 12:1, go forth from your country, from your relatives, from your father's house, to the land that I will show you. And I will make you a great nation, and I will bless you, and make your name great. And so you shall be a blessing. And I will bless those who bless you. The one who curses you I will curse. And in you all the families of the earth shall be blessed. Those three verses, God calls Abraham. Verse 12:1 actually takes place before Terah leaves with the family to go to Canaan. So God in Ur has called Abram before they set out. Now, verse 4. So Abram went forth as the Lord had spoken to him, and Lot went with him. Now, Abram was 75 years old when he departed from Haran. Now it talks about Abram leaving Haran, where Terah had just died. Verse 5. And Abram took Sarah his wife, and Lot his nephew, and all their possessions which they had accumulated, and the persons which they had acquired in Haran, and they set out for the land of Canaan. Thus they came to the land of Canaan, the land of the curse. Verse 6, and Abram passed through the land as far as the site of Shechem, to the oak of Moreh. Now the Canaanite was then in the land. And the Lord appeared to Abram and said, to your descendants I will give this land. So he built an altar there to the Lord who had appeared to him. And then he proceeded from there to the mountain on the east of Bethel, and pitched his tent with Bethel on the west and Ai on the east. And there he built an altar to the Lord and called upon the name of the Lord. And Abraham journeyed on, continuing toward the Negev. So we read through this whole thing. That sets the whole story of Abram and how he gets to Canaan. Now let's go back and look at the genealogy. Let's look at some more names, catch some of the details. Because there's some very famous names in here, and there's some names that aren't famous that you should become aware of. The first one, of course, is Shem. He's the beginning of the line. And then he's got a great-grandson named Eber. Why is Eber important? It's only important because it's from this guy that Hebrews get their name, the Hebrew root of the word for Hebrew. So Eber, Hebrew. Now he has a son named Peleg. Now what's so important about him is that his name means division, and Peleg helps us date the confusion at Babel. It gives us a time frame. When did Babel take place? About the time of Peleg. Now remember, everybody gets scattered at this point. They're not scattered any time above that. Shem and all his descendants are still settled there in the land of Shinar, Babylon, with everybody else. Now, everybody gets scattered during Peleg's lifetime. But you know what remains there? The Tower of Babel. It doesn't fall down. They just stop working on it. The religion that they intended and the city that they built lives on. Out of that religion comes this idolatrous practices that began there in that region of the world. Now, this is where Shem and his family stayed, so they're influenced by this whole region. Now, we come down the list here. We come to Nahor. Nahor is important because he's the father of Terah. And Terah, of course, we've already read, he's the father of Abraham, or Abram. Now, I want you to notice something. Draw a line back to Noah. And there's a line over here on the far right. And that's when Abram goes to Canaan. Now, put a line up where Abram goes to Canaan and put a line all the way up to Noah. Now, what's that tell you? He's still alive during the lives of all these men. Nahor, Terah, Abram. He's near the end of his life, but he's alive when Abram goes to Canaan. Also this, look at how the lifespan shortens. Noah lives 900 years. But notice how the lifespan gets shorter and shorter. And you're going to come to Nahor. Nahor only lives 148 years compared to Noah's 900 years. And those are some of the effects of the flood and the change in the environment that took place. The first thing Terah does, he packs everybody together and says, look, we're going to leave. 31 and 32. He packs everybody up and leaves. Now let's look at where they left. They're in Ur, the bottom of the Mesopotamian Valley, just south of Babylon. This is where they had built the tower. So this is a religious city. It's a commercial capital. It's got a population of about 24,000 people at the time. So it's a religious city, and it's filled with idols. And the family of Terah is very religious. They're religious idolaters. Joshua makes that real clear when he speaks to the people later on. When he tells them about Abraham, long ago, your ancestors lived on the other side of the Euphrates and worshipped other gods. One of those ancestors was Terah, the father of Abraham. This was a family of idolaters. God comes and calls Abram, gives him this promise, and they hear from the living God in the midst of this idolatry, and the whole family decides they're going to follow this God. And they set off for Canaan. So yeah, we're going to obey that. We're going to go. In 1130, you read that Sarah is barren. She's got no children. And this is the woman that Abraham marries. And people would say about her that the gods they're worshiping, they're not blessing her. The gods are not blessing her. She has no children. Now, she would feel the weight of this disgrace, because to not have children is really a tremendous loss for a woman, especially in this time when big families were considered to be a blessing. Children are actually, at one time in history, considered to be a blessing. I know it's hard for you to imagine that. Just like, you know, we're so used to the idea of evolution, it's hard to imagine anything else. But that's really true. Children were once considered a blessing. Now, he's married his half-sister. Now, you don't know this from reading Genesis 11. Abraham has to explain later to an Egyptian king, who he's just said, well, this isn't my wife, this is my sister. Now he's got to explain himself. So this is what he says in Genesis 20. She really is my sister. She's the daughter of my father, but not my mother. And I married her. So it's his half-sister. She's got a different mother than he's got. And so he's marrying his half-sister. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. So he didn't really fully lie, but he kind of lied. And we'll get to that when we get to Genesis 20. So Terah moves. Here's the story then. So Terah's moved from Ur to get to Canaan, but Terah doesn't get to Canaan. He dies in Haran. Now we come to the greatest promise in all of history. And basically, I'm going to go back over these because this promise is extremely important. In fact, it's so important, I think it's going to be on the quiz at the Bema seat, so you really should memorize this. God's call to Abraham, as we read it, is pure grace. God chose him, an idolater in an idolatrous family, and the only condition of this promise at this point is that Abraham must obey God's call, leave Ur, go to Canaan, to the land of the curse, to inherit the blessing. So the whole family goes. They leave their idols and their home, and basically what they're doing are trusting God. So let's look at 12:1. I'm going to go back over these again. 12:1. I will make you a great nation. That's the first major promise here. The Lord said to Abraham, go forth from your country, from your relatives, from your father's house to the land I will show you, and I will make you a great nation. Now this is for Abraham alone, not his father. Terah gathered up the family and took them to Canaan, but he dies in Haran. What? That's important for two reasons here. Number one is when he leaves, he takes Lot with him. Now, Lot is his son's son. So Lot is a grandson. What Terah is doing here is the right thing. He's taking responsibility for Lot, who no longer has a father. So he's taken him under his wing. But when he gets to Haran, he dies. Now Lot is now the responsibility of Abraham. As long as Terah is alive, who's the head of the family? Terah has to die in order for Abraham to be the head of the new nation. Because as long as Terah is alive, he's going to assume, wait a minute, you're my son, I'm over you. So Terah can't make it to Canaan. He has to die before Abraham can actually go in. Look at 12:2. I will bless you and make your name great, and so you be a blessing. I will bless you and I will bless all nations through you, is what he's going to say in verse 3. So Abraham's given this land of Canaan. This is the land for the sons of Abraham. It's a promised nation, a special nation. And you know, this is really the pattern of Genesis chapter 10. Families will become nations. So he's saying, Abraham, your family is going to become a nation. Now, this is also a promise that Abram is going to have children. He's married to a barren woman. They have no children. Even though she's barren, in this promise, there's a promise to her that she's going to bear children. When he says, I will bless you, in verse 2, that blessing is both peace now for him and inheritance later, which means children. We call that posterity as well as inheritance. So it's just like us. Now we have peace with God through Jesus. But is that the end? No, we look for glory with God later, which will be our inheritance, which is a peace we hold on to because we have a guaranteed blessing in the future. This is the same exact pattern you find here. The other thing he says is his name will be great. So he's going to be the father who's going to have a great name. And you know, this is ironic. To me, I said, remember that statement we read back in 11? Why did they say, let us come together, build a city and tower so that we can make a name for ourselves? Well, that was Nimrod's plan for Babel, to make a great name. Here, God's going to do it now. Canaan, in the land of the cursed son. And he's going to make a great nation and a great name. Now, 12:3, he says, I will bless all the families of the earth. Look at verse 3. I will bless those who bless you. The one who curses you, I will curse. And in you, Abraham, and the nation that will come from you, all the families of the earth shall be blessed. And that's going to, of course, be blessed by God. And these are, again, families become nations, not races. Now let's look at Abram's journey. Back off on the map a little bit and look at the whole journey. And Abram with Terah up to Haran from Ur, and that's where Terah dies, in Haran, right there. Abram leaves Haran with Lot. He leaves Haran, goes down to Shechem. And Shechem is kind of the entrance into Canaan as a land, just south of Damascus, and it's kind of the top of the land of Canaan. And so now, in verse 7, the Lord comes to Abram and gives him great reassurance. The Lord appeared to Abram and said, to your descendants, to your children, which he doesn't have any at this point, I will give this land. He's entered into it. He's at Shechem. God says, I'm going to give you this land. And now that he's there, God's coming to him and says, the promise I made, I'm keeping it. You're here. And so Abram, in response to that, builds an altar. He's now in the place of the curse that's going to become the place of blessing. And see, only the Lord can do that. Nobody else could have done this. Abram didn't come up with this on his own. Abram comes to this oak. And notice how it says when he comes to Shechem, he comes to the oak in verse 6, the oak of Moreh. Now that's just not just any oak. Oak trees were the place where idols were worshipped. And this continues on through the Old Testament. An oak tree on a hill is a place where idols are worshipped. This is a place of Canaanite idolatry. Notice what Abram does here. He doesn't plant a new tree. He builds an altar, a stone altar. And he worships the true God. This is the place of Canaanite idols. At the entrance of Canaan is now holy land. Land that God has said, this is yours. This is yours because I gave it to you. So now he goes to Bethel. Now it gets even more interesting because this is the center of Canaan. Bethel's just north of a very famous mountain, by the way, the Mount Moriah. You ever hear of that? Mount Moriah? What did Mount Moriah become? Jerusalem. The place of Jerusalem, the place of future worship, which is going to be the center of the nation of Israel for worship, and he builds another altar. But he doesn't just build an altar. He calls upon the name of the Lord. This doesn't mean he gets down on his knees before the altar and prays silently before God. No, this word means he publicly proclaimed out loud for all the idolaters to hear, "I worship the true God." And so Abram has become God's spokesman in the face of wickedness at this mountain in the midst of Canaan. Enoch preached. Noah preached. Now you have Abram who preached. He proclaims. He calls upon the name of the Lord. Now finally, he moves down to Negev. The word Negev means south or wilderness or desert. When you look at this, he's walked the full length of the land from Shechem to the desert of Negev. Whose land? His land. 12:7 says, "This is your land, the land of the curse." And what did the curse become? Blessing. The curse became a blessing. Now there's some conclusions I want to put together here. There's seven elements of this Abrahamic promise. I'm going to pull them all up here on the screen. And the first three I've already mentioned are pretty clear. The seven elements of the Abrahamic promise. "I'm going to make you a great nation. I will bless you. I will make your name great." Of course, this carries on with the idea of a great name has come to do with the nation that will come from him. Then he goes on to say that you be a blessing to others. This really has more of the flavor of a command in the midst of these seven points that I bring out here. But he says, "I will bless those who bless you." Now the word bless means I'm going to bring you peace and posterity or inheritance. I am going to take care of you. And I will bless anyone who blesses you. I will bless them with peace and future posterity. Now how does this all get accomplished for the world? Is through one person, Jesus Christ. Then he says, okay, if someone doesn't bless you, I'm going to curse them. I will curse those who curse you. Now there's two different words for curse here. The first word for curse is very, very severe. I will judge and destroy those who curse you. Very kind of a mild form of the word curse. Meaning if they simply disdain you or disregard you or just count you as nothing, they don't even have to do anything to you. Just kind of say, you're not worth my time. I will bring destruction on them. If they don't see who you for who you are, I will bring destruction on them. Now the first word curse there to judge, this is the kind of the word Paul used in Greek in the work in the book of Galatians when he says, if anyone brings a different gospel other than the one I preach, let him be what? Cursed, which means to be damned. This judgment and destruction. Now he's going to leave that and make it more positive again. I will bless all the families of the earth through you. Abraham, you have a great position. You have a great, great destiny and a great blessing here. And you are going to be held so high that all nations are going to be blessed through you. What do you think of that? Isn't that an amazing promise? Now this promise gets ratified, and the pastor talked about bringing all this together. This promise gets ratified and nailed down and made solid in Genesis 15. And then he comes later and says, you know what? I made this promise and I made this covenant and it's totally one-sided. See, the promise until Abraham left and went to Canaan was conditional. If he hadn't gone, God wouldn't keep the promise through him. But once he makes this contract, that's unconditional, that's nailed down, that can never be rescinded. And then he comes later and says, well, I made this promise. I'm going to give you a sign that this promise is true. It's called circumcision. And remember, this is a pattern we've already seen. He made a covenant with Noah. Remember, I'm never going to destroy the earth again with water. That's a one-sided contract promise. You know, Noah, you don't have to do anything to prevent a flood. Don't worry about it. But I'm never going to destroy the earth again with water. And I'm going to put a rainbow as a sign of that promise. So here you have now a pattern, a covenant and a sign, a covenant and a sign. So whenever there's an unconditional promise, there's always a sign that goes with it. This is why I think this will be on the quiz at the Bema Seat. Yeah. So, Ken, would you close for us in prayer today? Appreciate it. Thanks.